football on Off the Ball.
It's a hammer blow for the league in many ways. Damien Duff and Champions League football sounds great together.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The League of Ireland Pod
on Off the Ball,
brought to you by the refreshingly alcohol-free Rockshore 00. Get the facts, be drink aware. Visit drinkaware.ie.
You're welcome along to the League of Ireland Pod. Nathan with you this week. Vinny Perth, special guest in studio. How are you?
All good, really good, yeah.
Gareth McGlynn, afternoon.
What's a crack, man?
Quite weak since the last podcast. We've only gone and lost the manager of the defending champions, the most high-profile manager the League of Ireland has ever had. The league's top scorer is gone. But hey, ye boys would never desert us in our time of need, would ye?
No chance. Well, I don't know. Funny Perth, I'm sure he's a wanted man.
I'm wanted, all right.
He's warned us against this.
Yes.
We're not allowed Linkham
to any
jobs in future.
In football.
Ever.
Ever.
He's not interested.
He's retired.
He didn't say that. We're just not allowed to talk about it.
Yeah.
I honestly don't even know where to start with this. Maybe we should start with Derry City. Back-to-back wins in Dublin.
Unbelievable. What a weekend. What a 4 days. What do we think?
I don't think anyone's really thought about Derry, to be honest. Is your problem there, Gareth?
No. And to be honest with you, they were, what, were they sixth, seventh? What, before those two games? Two different games. I was at both games doing commentary. I thought they were brilliant against Shells. Not so good against Pats, but a great defensive display. Some standout performances. But 6 points away to both those teams. I mean, Tiernan Lynch will be grinning from ear to ear.
Our live game couldn't have been better picked for Friday night. We're at Eamon DC Park for Galway United against Shelburne. Jonathan Higgins and Brian Kerr on commentary live on News Talk. And, well, the only topic of conversation around Eamon DC Park is going to be about the two men that aren't there. So Damien Duff, as we know, is gone. The news today is that Moses Dyer is also gone. The League of Ireland's top scorer. There have been reports that Derry City had made a bid for him. My understanding is that he's heading for Asia, but he has already gone. So he has left Galway United. He's no longer in the country. And at some stage over the coming days or weeks, he's going to finalise a transfer, more than likely to a team in Cambodia. So this is a bit of a shock for all the Galway United supporters. Maybe not a shock for everybody around the club, who I'm sure understand what was said and how the deal was done to get Moses Dyer here in the first place. He was, of course, sent off on Monday night after a little scrap with John Mahon, which was, in fairness, brave of him, to put it mildly. But listen, we'll get to Moses Dyer. Vinnie Perth, I'm fair to say, has given his thoughts on Damien Duff once or twice over the week.
I have, yeah.
Gareth McGlynn, what was your reaction when the news filtered through?
It felt like a death in the League of Ireland family. That's what I was as shocked as anyone. But are we real? When you think about it, right, in the cold heart of day, are we that shocked when you see how committed, how passionate, just the characteristic, the personality, the devilment that Damien Duff has? I think he's made the decision with the players in mind and the club in mind. I think he's never put himself first, is what you would get throughout the whole year, whether it be with the media, with the club. He's always put himself out there. He's been honest. He's basically torn up the PC nonsense, politically correct. He's just gone out there and been himself. So I think this is just himself. I honestly, being at the game on Friday night, I wasn't as engaging. But for 7 minutes in the game, I said I couldn't believe how vocal he was and animated he was. And during those 7 minutes, Shelburne were brilliant. He was barking at the players. He was encouraging them. He was demanding from the players. Boyd had a chance with a header. John Martin just missed it in the back stick. It was the best they'd played. But he then stopped and the players stopped. So I just think after the game, I don't think he had any intention of resigning after the game, to be honest with you. When he listened to his comments, I think he sat on it Saturday. I think Sunday he's woken up and he says, I'm not even thinking about the Linfield match. I have taken, and like he said, I've taken this squad, these players, as far as I can take them. And I think he's just made a decision, which he was never going to go back on. But personality and character, I mean, it's been three and a half incredible years, and it's going to be a massive, monumental gap in the league.
Yeah, it's hard not to feel very sad about this situation, because Damien Duff has been such a force of positivity for the league, both in terms of the Shelburne story over particularly the past year to 18 months, but also how he's become this figurehead for the league and defender of the league, and has put it in a position in terms of the coverage it gets way beyond anything that has gone before. And also, sad for him with the level of enjoyment he seemed to take for it. It gave him a real sense of purpose, and the obsession that he had over it, and that willingness to give everything of himself to the players and the club, that somehow he wasn't able to find a way to either get more out of the players on a continuous basis or get more out of himself, that he just left it all out there. And maybe what Gareth just mentioned there about that 7-minute spell sums up the issue that he touched upon on Friday night, that he still was having to give absolutely everything to get the best out of these players, and that always is going to have a certain shelf life.
Yeah, I felt it was a shelf life in one sense how Damien managed, but that didn't need to be with him. That could have been maybe freshen up your players. I think if you manage that way, people often use the term Mourinho-esque, if he's going to manage that way, maybe if he looks back, and I think he'll be a better manager as a result of what's happened at Shelburne in terms of where he would have perceived to have gone wrong, he'd definitely be a better manager. I think most people are when something goes wrong. I think it's part of the development of people. So, look, I think that's huge. I think it's a huge story in itself. And Damien is such a private person, we won't know. But I think this is what got him out of bed every day. He's obviously, you would imagine, quite affluent in terms of what he's done in his career previous to this. So, you know, I just hope he's enough challenges in his own life to keep his brain busy and occupied. And I don't believe in the rhetoric that he won't be employable to other people. I think he will. Unfortunately, get pigeonholed. Same thing happened to me. People think I still live up in Mahavnamoor in Dundalk. People just think Damien is Shelburne. He's not. He just fought for his own team. So, but all that will sort of. I'd love to hear a good in-depth interview with Damien in a couple of weeks' time. I think that would be really interesting just to hear his thoughts. But Gareth's right, and some people don't like that rhetoric, particularly fans of other clubs, that it's a loss to the league. We had a league before Damien. We'll have one after him, but I mean, he's given us an extra level of credibility with him being involved in the league and the way he spoke so passionately about it, that there's not, undoubtedly it's a loss.
But I think, Nathan, just I don't know if we're going to go off this topic. I think it's a massive problem football having in this country. I think we're struggling to attract the best people, retain the best people, and develop them. You look at the FEA trying to recruit people, they're swinging doors all over the place. They can't get people in. You look at now, the CEO of Shamrock Rovers is going to be leaving us, who is obviously doing a good job. You've now Damien Duff, who's going to leave the league as well. Do I know what the solution is? No, but I think there's a huge problem. And League of Ireland football, as we know, it's getting more engagement, it's getting more attractive, it's never been more attractive. So getting people to stay in the league is getting them to come to the league is hard, but keeping them seems to be just as hard.
Yeah, it's an interesting point that you have the CEO of the most successful club, the manager of the champions, and the league's top scorer all leaving at every level. That struggle is real. Duff is a unique situation in so many ways, both in terms of, as you say, that sense that he didn't need Shelburne. Yeah. They needed him far more beyond any other manager that's ever been in the league, because of all he's achieved in his life up until this has put him in a financial position, as far as we're aware. We obviously don't know the ins and outs of that. And that it would always more than likely be him who made that cut. And it almost happened 18 months ago when they had to sell the club to keep him at the club, which itself is a unique situation. There's no question in terms of what it means for the league. He is by far and away the most recognisable figure. He's a story. He's always a story. And it's beyond compare in the league. That the only person you could think of who could come in even and maybe I'm doing an injustice to other Irish internationals whose personality has never shone in this way, would be a Roy Keane, who everybody wants to go and everyone wants to listen to him. I'm not saying there's not his contemporaries who are better coaches and might not go on to achieve more in coaching, but I don't know if they will be able to tap into what people want from their manager the way he's been able to. And he's brought other people up with him. Like Stephen Bradley has had enormous success, but they're, even before the back and forth, they've sort of become the new RTE panel. Like they're who people go to after a big event in Irish football for comment, the way we would have listened to Giles and Brady and Dunphy. Those two are the ones who everybody wanted to hear and who were so vocal and so honest and open with their views. And not having Duff there diminishes all that. And there's no getting away from it. And there's no replacing it.
That's an interesting point. And just thinking the way you're speaking there, like it's given people, I use the word credibility. And Stephen Bradley always had credibility. It's just of a higher level now. Even myself, I've been busy enough between different bits and pieces in media. And I think the Damien Duff element of the league has helped me being busy. So I think we all should be grateful for what he's done for the league. And I often, when I talk about this, I always remind people there was a league before that was developing nicely, and there will be a league after him. But no, absolutely, I think that's an important point to make, Nathan. I think he's helped so many bits and pieces around the
league.
It's
almost unquantifiable, because you're right. And look, the league was having a strong organic growth in terms of clubs getting a better understanding of their place in the community and rising attendances. But from a purely selfish media point of view, there's nobody in the league that drives viewership or listenership like Damien Duff. You only have to look at the clips that we put up around matches to look at the numbers of Duff and almost every other manager. Something spectacular would need to happen with another manager and something they say to get near the levels of Damien Duff. And I know that's replicated across newspaper readership as well, and the online numbers and their ability to track that. So there is a challenge now there for the League of Ireland of how you fill that vacuum, because it's not straightforward. And if it is Joey O'Brien who takes over, like, that's not Joey. Now maybe it is and he's hidden it well, but he's obviously a very thoughtful guy, very well respected.
Just before Gareth jumps back in, I think what you said is really important. I think there's two things to point out. Is one of the reasons we're having a lot of these difficulties with CEOs and different things, our house still isn't in order underneath a lot of these teams. So therefore, that's when you get instability. So I think that's important to say. And I think a really important point to make is, because I've waxed lyrical about Damien, he was aided and abetted by a group of players that went on that journey as well. And they've got a little bit of too much criticism for me, and by a great institution, the Shelbourne Football Club is. They fought to keep their own ground. All of them little things was helped by Damien, absolutely. But there is a great club there. And that's my point about a club being there before Damien. And he's brought it back to the level it probably deserves to be at. But I think it's important to make out them players were certainly, and his backroom staff played a huge part in him being successful in our league.
They're obviously all completely shell-shocked. So I was down in Waterford on Monday night, and I think Joey O'Brien was being honest as to how blindsided he was, and it was just put the head down, get through a training session, prepare for a game, go with maybe the obvious motivation of the club is going to survive far longer than everybody in this dressing room, play for that greater thing. And Joey was very pragmatic as well, of with the career he's had and the clubs he's played for. Like, managers come and go. And while we on the outside are going, well, not managers like Damien Duff don't come and go. These guys are a little bit different. It's like, well, actually, when you're a footballer, you're a lot more realistic. And Mark Coyle, I thought, was spoke very well after the game as well and was interested. And there was clearly a frustration with Duff's comments on Friday night about the preparation. Like, so much has happened. Like, Friday night, I watched back 3 or 4 separate interviews with Duff, and each one seemed to go that little bit further. And the thing that irked them the most, it seems, were the comments about basically Shamrock Rovers being better professionals, and these guys do it year on year and keep themselves motivated, and our guys don't do that. And the bit of, well, I'm still preparing like a pro. I'm having my nap. I'm having my siesta. Are my guys doing that? And like, we heard Mark Coyle after the game saying, well, how does he know what we're doing? Now, maybe, again, there's the Alex Ferguson side of, he knows exactly what everyone's doing.
He's always watching. It wouldn't surprise you as well. But I thought Joey was brilliant. He's just playing it down. All Joey is concentrated on now is getting a reaction from the players. So he has to play it down. So he learnt loads from Damien. That's exactly what Damien would have done. His ability to dictate the narrative for his players or for the club was incredible. So Joey's obviously picked up on that. We saw that in the performance. I mean, I thought they were unbelievable down in on the night. They were running. They were harassing.
Is that just a natural bounce, Gareth, from a manager change and almost the adrenaline of that? Because the feedback coming out of Friday night was that this was a team that was looking lethargic, that was struggling to get around the pitch they once did. And again, as you say, I was blown away on Monday night of, oh, this felt like the Shells of last season.
Yeah, it was incredible, honest to God. I couldn't believe what I was watching on Friday night. And some people, I've seen them maybe four times live. Some people were saying that it's been like this all year. They've been plenty of possession, creating chances. But that kind of tenacity to get the ball back high up the pitch, it just wasn't there. And obviously, Joey has tapped into something that's got a reaction. And that's why I said, I think Damien Duff himself being able to analyse it and say, I'm going to step away here and hope that they get a bounce or they get a reaction to get them through the Linfield matches, to get them further up the pitch. I mean, I think it's incredibly selfless from him. But Joey O'Brien, what a great person to run on with it and finish the season. I mean, I think they'll be absolutely fine.
Do you expect, Vinny, that Joey O'Brien will get the job?
We just have question marks on that, and all they are is, I mean, my initial thought is Joey O'Brien would get the job, but there's a pro license issue there. He will have a certain dispensation for 60 days on trying to find out whether that covers them for Champions League football. I know they do have a pro license or someone that's on the course. It's the rules have gone back to what they were originally. You just need to be on the course. And then you're deemed a pro licensed coach. That's the way it is in almost all of the jurisdictions. So, I mean, it's a technicality. People might think that, you know, what's that got to do with anything? That is really important. It's important to the FEI and usually important to UEFA. So, so that is a stumbling block, and that is something they have to get over. So if they decide Joey is the right man for the job, then they've got to win the FEI over with another appointment of a UEFA pro licensed coach. Here in Ireland, there's only probably 100 people with that license. So that may mean he has to go searching. He's had a lot of contacts throughout the game, Joey, so he may have somebody in mind for that role.
There is somebody at Chelsea though with a pro license.
Yeah, but I don't want to speak too much about that because he is an employee of the FEI, whether that's currently at the moment or whether he's on leave, I'm not 100% sure. So there is somebody there, but that guy has to be called a manager, has to be called a manager, and has to turn up to the Champions League as manager. Now, whether that's still within the 60 days or not, I'm not 100% sure. I'm waiting to find that out. So Joey will be allowed to league games 100% sure for 60 days, but I'm not sure whether that allows for Champions League. So they have to appoint somebody. And that person has to be deemed as the first team manager.
Gareth, my initial reaction on Sunday afternoon was that those comments on Friday night, maybe Duff had woken up on Saturday and felt, I've gone too far. It's not me. Like, there's a lot of things that have been happening over the last few weeks and I've said too much and I've fallen out with people. And actually, that's not me. That's not how I want to portray myself. And I'm not getting the bounce from the group that I usually have, and I'm sort of done. What I've heard since is, you know, he was still in touch with people on Saturday evening preparing for the game on Monday, so maybe it all happened but only 24 hours later. But the timing of it, like 2 weeks before that game against Linfield, 20 years since Shells were last in the Champions League, how important it is financially for the club. Are Shells fans right to be disappointed with Duff that he picked now, even if it was always going to end this way?
Absolutely not. The Shells fans should only have two words, and that is thank you. Because if you think back, if he was preparing on Saturday night, I do not think that Damien Duff has left because of his comments. We know what he's like. He wears his heart in his sleeve. He just says whatever he's thinking, whatever's raw right there now. And that's why for 3.5 years, we've all fallen in love with him. We love listening to him. We love watching him. Even if you're another fan of another team, even if you're another player in another team, what's going to happen. But I don't think he has left because of that or because he's fallen out with people. He's fallen out with other managers to motivate himself and motivate his players and motivate other managers to increase standards. That's what he's done since he came into the league. He's increased standards in his playing and his own players around the league, the managers. Can you imagine a manager speaking to a player and he knows that player is speaking to Damien Duff over Shelburne as an option? They are breaking their backside to try and supersede what he's offering and what he's delivering. So he's increased standards everywhere. So I think he sat down, he's taken Saturday to think about it, he's prepared as normal, and on Sunday he's come to a decision. This is not an emotional thing. He didn't do it after the game, after making them comments. The comments after the game were, as Mark Coyle said, was to get a reaction for the next game. I believe he sat down on Sunday and he's looked at it all and he says, my job is to get the best out of the players for the benefit of the club, and I can't do it anymore. And that's why I'm stepping away.
I know from talking to people on Monday night down in Waterford that certainly Shells would feel that he hadn't lost the dressing room and they wanted to get that message out, because I think that there was a sense that maybe that was a factor in this as well. And while there were certainly some questions about the comments and frustration about the comments on Friday night, that like the players still wanted him there, the players still believed in him as manager. Okay, so they shouldn't be disappointed. And even talking to Shells fans on Monday night, they all sort of felt it's probably always going to end this way. It's just a shame it happened now. But if his heart's not in it, we don't want him hanging around for the sake of it. Like, there is another part of manager that when the going gets tough, as it has got tough, that you need to find a way out of it. So if you aren't getting that connection with the players that you did 12, 18 months ago, that you need to find some way of getting it. Is that a valid point?
Yeah, it is a little bit, to be honest. I heard a bit of Keith Long's interview earlier on this morning, and it was something similar around fighting for certain things within Waterford. And even when he felt his job was doomed, he was still fighting and trying to come up with a solution, because that's what you've done. So there is some who make the argument that Damien took the easy option, and I don't know. I find it hard to believe. I think the players were 100% behind him. They weren't ultimately doing what he wanted on the pitch. I think there's a bit of blame possibly on both sides in terms of, have the players come off it? Yeah, you would say they have, outside of probably Evan Caffrey. No one has reached the heights of last year. At times Wood has, and they've had lots of injuries, particularly the Paddy Barrett one has been huge for them, and losing a couple of key players. Mark Coyle, we haven't seen the best of him because he's had to drop back. They've also, really importantly then, from Damien's point of view, you wonder whether he'll question, he's come off what they've done last year. They've chopped and changed, started the season with a front two, they've played with back threes, and they've come away from what they were last season, I would say. They've tried to evolve. So there's probably a bit of blame all the way through all of that. And look, it's so hard to give up. You feel like you can turn the ship when you're in this situation of being there and of worn the t-shirt, and it is difficult to know what's the right thing to do, like, particularly when you know it feels like you're on a boat, and no matter how hard you just keep taking water in, and it's difficult and it's not easy. So, you know, you have to respect that he's made the decision that he feels right, but ultimately it's left Shells in a really difficult situation, because, as I said earlier on, if they decide Joey's the right man, a lot of us would like to see him given that opportunity. Well, he can't be. Yeah, he just can't be the manager. There is ways around a bit of everything, but it's going to be really difficult to appoint him as the full-time manager under current League of Ireland rules. So he's left them in a difficult position, and I can't emphasise enough how huge the game against Linfield is. The potential for Shells, if they win that game, is absolutely off the charts. So therefore, you can see the argument that Damien has sort of got going when it got going, you know.
Yeah, and I think nobody wants to say that because it just feels so out of character from everything we've seen from him that he would just walk away because, as you say, it just got too difficult. That, again, feels like there must be an underlying reason. And maybe at some stage, when he's had a bit of a break, he'll come out and he'll talk about that and he'll explain everything. Anything left to say about Damien Duff?
I think obviously the game's important to Shelburne, but I think overall for the league, we can't forget how important the game is that Shells go and beat Linfield and go deep in Europe. And all the clubs have got a responsibility to do that. So I think everybody in the league will be shouting on Shelburne in that match. But would we have wanted a flying Shelburne, a flying Damien Duff in that game? Of course. But it's just not going to be the case, unfortunately. But I still think they can go and I think they'll take care of Linfield.
Yeah, and that's why, to finish in terms of Shelburne, real quickly, Nathan, is that that next appointment is huge for them because nobody has time. Well, I remember having a similar thing where Kenny left Dundalk and it was a similar bombshell to a lot of people. A lot of the players didn't know what to do, but it was an end of season and it gave everybody a bit of time to breathe. This is different. You're 2 weeks away from Linfield where you must prepare to the inch of your life before you play Linfield. And if they win that, the games that come after that, you don't need someone coming in trying to work out who's their best players, where does he play, not really knowing the league, not knowing the group he has. So how Shelburne fix this is really important.
Nathan, do you know any pro-licensed managers that have experience in Europe, experience one in the league, that are just out of
massive
work at the
media profile? Massive media profile.
Massive media. It's been watching the league for the last couple of
years. You're on the TV more than Duff ever was. He played 100 times for Ireland.
Don't know.
He's not having it. And look, yeah. I thought you were going to go with the line I was going to go while we're having a pop at him. And everything worked out just fine in Dundalk.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it did, nearly.
Nearly won a double. There, you know.
But we only won 4 out of 5 trophies, to be fair.
There we go. He always has that line ready, doesn't he?
He loves it.
I'm sure we'll talk about Damien Duff again over the course of the summer. And who knows where he will pop up next.
In case you missed this morning's Off the Ball breakfast,
we had this.
I gave it so much for so long. I just knew deep down it was time to go. Even losing the Galway last year, don't get me wrong, it was devastated after the game in Liverpool. Was it really crushed like it was in other years? I probably wasn't. And I kind of went, that's the time to get out.
And we also had this.
David Hifford goes into that Cavan game and has 13 shots. 13 shots in a game of football. Like, Cavan had 14 shots from play in the entire game. He had more shots in one game than Keane Lynch has had in the entire championship. It's a reflection of the new world order that we're seeing the way Gaelic football is now, and a guy like this is just having the platform to thrive.
Catch up now on the Goal Out app and every weekday morning when Off the Ball Breakfast is live from 7:30 on your OTB social channels.
It all obviously overshadowed a huge result for Bohemians on Monday night that I don't know if it keeps the title race alive, but allows us to say that the title race is alive, 9 points behind, 2 games in hand. The performance from Bohemians to make it 3 wins this year against Shamrock Rovers. What are they doing, Vinny, against Rovers that nobody else is able to do?
Playing with intensity, showing a lack of respect on the football pitch, pressing Rovers, not letting them settle. Healy has been one of the best players in the league. He was non-existent. They got in his face. They harassed, they harried him. Tactically, Alan Wren's got a couple other things really well. They've played Clark as that false nine. He got great support from Dale Rooney. He came narrow off the right and almost played as a front two at different stages. If you go back to the goal, he's in basically the penalty spot, Rooney, to finish. John Mountney was a mad one playing on the left wing. I didn't know where that came from. Done a great job up and down, won a lot of headers, done all the ugly stuff, almost scored one of the goals of the season, and just played with intensity. And Rovers didn't have a plan B on the night and must unsettle Bradley a little bit. But if I was watching from another team in the league, the challenge with doing what Ball's done is if Rovers do beat that first press or second press, then they can really hurt you. But you know what? I'd rather die on my sword and go and get after them. I think what Bowes have done is given a template to the rest of the league and go, it's different going up to Tala. Probably feel like Daly Mount's not a small pitch. Maybe it feels a little bit different. But just go and get in their face. Don't let them settle. And Bohemians, it was probably the best performance I've seen from any team in the league this season in terms of the way, the manner in which he done it. That first half could have been 4 or 5, but for a couple of different bits and pieces. Rather settled a little bit second half, but taking nothing away from Bowles, they were exceptional.
Yeah, brilliant, unbelievable, fearless. And you know what I think as well? I mean, Rovers were off it last year. Rovers are humming at the minute. That's the most impressive part. I mean, Bowes have thrown a so many curveballs. They brought on Smith at right back. Monaghan played centre half. I mean, Smith hasn't been seen for 6 or 7 weeks, and he's just brought him on right hand side. I can imagine, I'd love to ask Vinny this, I can imagine if you're opposition manager and you're seeing all this change in the team coming to play, I would say Bradley, and probably Bradley to a certain regard, probably didn't care how Bowes played just by how well they're playing. But seeing all those names and the formations trying to work it out, it must be an absolute nightmare. And then the intensity that they started with, I mean, he must have been just shell-shocked.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because I obviously got the team sheet and you're trying to put it together for a graphic. The last place I thought I'd see John Mountain was left wing. I was trying to decide, because he's played right back for them and he's been a right winger all his life. And then how did the rest of it, Moran then was gone, he's going to put him into midfield, who's going to play left back, is he going to switch Smith? So absolutely, there's no way, not a big deal, it was more than just that, but there's no way outside of knowing Clark was going to play as the false nine, because to be fair, when they've done that, they've by and large won their games. Ironically, the 2 times they haven't played Clark as the false nine, they've lost, and Colin Whelan's a really good player, but they lost up in Drogheda and they lost down in Waterford when they left Clark out. So that sort of false nine with the runners behind them has been really, really good for them. But yeah, tactically, it was actually a really interesting battle. And Bradley has won a lot of those tactical battles over the last number of years. Probably, I wouldn't say he lost the tactical battle, but the tactics swung towards Bowles, and that's ultimately what he wanted.
Do you think it'll have an impact on Bradley's tactical approach to Europe?
I think, to be fair, they've had a certain way of playing. They have a DNA. They've stuck to that no matter what. No matter
the reason
who
I ask
played.
That is, if you look at last year's Conference League campaign, Jack Byrne never started a game. Now, very different fitness level. Like Graham Burke, after that performance up in Larne, didn't feature a huge amount after that either, that he started looking for something different, a bit more physicality, more legs. And is that what he's going to go back to again for Europe this year?
Yeah, it's hard to know, because we don't know where Jack was at that stage in terms of fitness, Jack in particular, but Jack was taken off early. I don't know if it was an injury, but didn't do enough. There was a huge disconnect. He couldn't get the ball or get close enough to Aaron Green in the game. So there were no real out balls. He went over the top a couple of times. But you're right, Nugent played a good bit in Europe last year. He gave them real running power. Who was the other one in midfield from Estonia?
Poom.
Again, running power. So I think you have to look at that, particularly away from home when a lot of teams play with intensity in Europe. Yeah, his team selection will be huge. But I think the Aaron Green has played so well. I was just a little bit surprised going away to Daly Mount starting him, because they didn't have an out ball. That was the biggest challenge.
Yeah, especially Noonan. I can't believe how well he's played. Down in Drogheda, he was the best player on the pitch by a mile. I'm surprised he didn't start up front. Maybe he thought the game might be just a little bit big for him. But, I mean, Aaron Green, he's played Aaron Green every time he's come to the Brandywell as well. And Aaron Green has done incredibly well with his pace against Derry's back 4 or 5. But Noonan, what an option he is. I mean, and in Europe, just to answer your question, Nathan, I think he's got that many options that he can do whatever he wants depending on the opposition, whether it's get plenty of legs, runners, or at home against a not so quality side, play more attacking.
Probably underlined as well how important Corey O'Sullivan is and has become.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the young players have really done well for them. It helps that the team has gone so well. I just see the other night as a bit of a blot on the copybook. They got done. I see them bouncing back quickly. I think Europe is set up for them this year. They're in really good form. As much as we'd like Rovers to struggle for the league and the tightness of the league, I just see that as a one-off. I don't see teams able to do what Bowles done. I just don't see them following that. So many teams go and play Shamrock Rovers and match them up and think that's the best way to play. It's not. It's not the best way to play against them, and people need to realise that. But Yeah, Corey O'Sullivan's been, look, the league is flooded with really good, exciting young players, and he's right up there. Probably doesn't grab the headlines as much because not a goal scorer, but it is important. You wonder whether Conor Madison was at the ground. I heard Bradley's comments. I don't know what he's talking to you, was he, after the game? Not sure that he's they're interested in him.
Well, he actually just has re-signed for Gillingham.
All right, interesting, yeah.
So he, I think, had been linked with, particularly with Pats, and yeah. Rovers are in the mix as well. So he's obviously decided to stay in England.
I still think they'll sign a wing-back. I'd say they have their eye on one or two, and I still think they'll sign a wing-back.
One or two in the league?
No, I think they look to the UK. I'm not sure you can...
There's obviously a bit of speculation around Enda Stevens possibly coming home.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure. I think they might go for something with a bit more legs. Maybe. Enda Stevens, to be fair, could play the way they play.
Who are you talking about, Vinny?
I think they've got a couple of options, and you're hearing people asking the questions, so I think they've got a couple of options.
Will they be starters, Vinny? Are these players coming in?
I think if they get them, they probably will. But like, if Enda Stevens was to sign, for argument's sake, you could see him playing, say, he can play in the sort of the back three, the way they play and the way they dominate the ball, so as well as he can play wing back at different stages. So
okay, because you can sign somebody on the left and move Honan over to the right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Do you not think,
Vinny, that they need someone on the wing backs like Ferrugia, who is more offensive rather than defensive?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think that's, like, to be fair, they haven't been that bad. Danny Grant has grown into that role, to be fair to him. I wasn't sure about it earlier on the season, but he's got stronger and stronger, and he's starting to understand what's being asked of him. There's no doubt Trevor Clark being injured for so long has been a big blow to them. I think what we've seen the other night from Hoolan is he can do that wing-back role. He can do it very well. He's probably better as more of a defensive player. So I think what they'd like is an out-and-out attacking wing-back on his side, going back to the Ronan Finn days, even, where he joins in centrally. Ferrugia used to that, join in centrally at different stages, where Honan is more, just a little bit more conservative in his defensive duties. That's the sense I get from the way they like it. So there's a little bit of yin and yang on one either side. So
what about Asua at Galway? I know obviously they're going to be somewhat reeling with the news that Moses Dyer is gone, and this time last year they lost Kazim to Pats. I know Asua has been linked with potentially a move to Pats. Now maybe Kazim is a warning sign, considering even when Anto Breslin's been out injured, Kazim hasn't got in and doesn't seem to get any game time since that.
Just
move.
On that, is the difference now is when we at Dundalk would have been taking players or Rovers then, a lot of the clubs hadn't got the house in order. People were on small contracts, probably buyout clauses. The people who own Galway aren't stuck for a few quid, as well as the people up in Derry when we would have got Duffy, or when we didn't get Duffy from Derry. But you know the point, McElhenney, it's different now, so it's much harder to, that's why I say they're probably looking in the UK, much harder to get players out of the league now. I mean, no one is stuck for a few quid.
Yeah, what a player he is, Nathan Asua. Wow. He's played the whole season right back, right wing back. He hasn't got a yellow card. He does not tackle unless he's going to take the ball. He's incredible. I've never seen anything like it, and he does have that threat and that athleticism as well. He'd be a good addition to any of the top five or six.
But Rovers' recruitment, Nathan, has been exceptional over last year too. I think that's important. Like Healy, I know you get a couple, but Healy, like second division in Belgium, has been like exactly what they needed, as they were just struggling in that area. A couple of players getting a little bit older. Pulme obviously left, and they've gone and improved it. Obviously, Josh Hoolan. Like, not a lot of us seeing, we're seeing potential in him, but Bradley threw him in and he's gone up levels. So they've got a lot of that stuff really well.
They've answered all the questions, because I would have sat here after the four in a row and wondered if Bradley had brought them as far as he could, and not questioning his managerial capabilities there, but actually there's a level you can get to, and that the ways you improve your squad were almost now beyond St. Patrick's Athletic, and that you can either promote youth, which during that four in a row, let's be honest, they didn't really do. It wasn't full of academy players. Yet since then, Corey O'Sullivan has come out of the academy. John O'Sullivan is starting games. Austin Vuna is coming off the bench every week. Michael Noonan's not an academy player, but again, is 16 years of age and starting games on a regular basis. You can't sign players from the other teams as easily as you did, which again is how they built that four in a row winning side. But the signings they have made, they signed Josh Honan from Cork and they signed Enn McGinty from Sligo, so two starters. And also the one area we'd always felt hit and miss, which is bringing Irish lads back from abroad, they've absolutely nailed in getting Matty Healy, in getting Aaron McAniff. And also the incredible thing, and this may be where the difficult decisions are starting to come for Bradley now, is they've maintained their entire squad at the same time. So it hasn't been this dramatic overhaul. All right, Richie Towell has left and Alan Manus and Sean Hoare was always on the periphery. But actually, they've added all of these guys and kept that spine there at the same time. And probably the next challenge is some of those guys, and we're seeing it with Gary O'Neill, some of those guys are going to have to start seeing less game time. And how do you handle that bit of multiple title-winning players not getting on the pitches as often as they have? It's been an incredible overhaul while sort of continuing at the same time with that Conference League run.
Yeah, and remember, people like James Brown, Killian Phillips, two great examples. So many of our players are just heading to England now, where they used to go to, whether it was Shells in the noughties, whether it was Dundalk and whatever, Rovers. They're now got a lot of, someone showing a bit of talent between sort of 18 and 22, 23 are jumping to England to take a chance, whether it's in League One, League Two. So that makes it even more difficult. And I also think, the average age of the league winning team for nearly 20 odd years has always been the highest. There's a reason for that. I think they've been forced into some of the young players because of injuries, but then at the same time, the young players have seized their moment, and that's just because they've the structures underneath right, and it's working so well for them.
I want to touch on Pats because they're obviously, you'd have to say, pretty much in crisis in terms of their form. But just before we leave Galway United then, and that news breaking today about Moses Dyer's departure as the league's top scorer and the impact that he's had and what it might mean for Galway United for the rest of the season, Gareth?
It's typical. We talked about it there about Rovers. Recruitment is key. Malcolm Shaw was brought in and I watched him. He came on for 25 minutes in the Brandywell for his first game. He is like a carbon copy of Moses Dyer, only a little bit taller. He's a good, good player. So I don't know whether Moses Dyer gave John Caulfield and Ollie Horgan the heads up that he was going to be leaving and he was looking out and he wanted to get closer to home or whatever it was, but they've brought him in and he's a direct replacement. So, I think they've done brilliant. You obviously then, the other one is if Hooban leaves Derry, would he go into Galway and go back there and play? So there's options there for Caulfield and Ollie Horgan, but I mean, Galway will be fine. They've done it with Kazim when they lost him. Isu is there now. They always have a network of players, whether it's Ollie or John, they pull them out of everywhere, rabbit in a hat.
I'd say you'd have centre-backs all over the league fake an injury before they go down to Galway if you've got Pat Hooban starting up front with about five other lads who are all about 6'4" in that Galway United side. The internet will explode with Hooban up front for Caulfield and Horgan. Is it a runner?
I'm not so sure. I mean, why hasn't it happened before now? It's pretty clear Pat is not sort of, his face doesn't fit in Derry anymore in terms of the manager. So the manager doesn't, Pat shouldn't be looking at, say, the Irish League. I think, not disrespectful, but I think there's a Premier Division club full time that suits Pat better than that. But Derry have to be willing to let him go, and if they're not willing to let him go, that's tough. He has to sit there and rot. But ultimately, it's probably in one of them stalemates where I think Derry don't want to give him to somebody who could knock them out of Europe, because Pat could go to any club in the Premier Division and score 10, 15 goals. So there's probably a game of cat and mouse going on between the two of them. But Galway would be a good fit for him. He's obviously from Bohola. No, that's John Mountney. Pat's Loughrea, is it, down that way? Anyway, all that part of the world's all the same, Nathan, as you know.
Wow.
The big thing about Pat going to Galway was obviously Derry put in a bid for Moses Dyer. Had that have happened, I think it would have been much better and easier to let Pat go to Galway. So that kind of scuppers that plan.
So Pat's 3 defeats in a row, 1 win in their last 7 games, 6th in the table, 15 points behind Shamrock Rovers. This is not what anybody was expecting. Vinny's been doing a bit of a deep dive as to what some of the issues are for Pats. So I'm not sure if we have the graphic of the way they've been lining up at the moment that we could put up on screen to see. But what have you seen from Pats this season?
Yeah, interesting here. Gareth's thoughts, he obviously seen them live the other night. I've only seen them on screen, is that they're so open in midfield. They're playing with 1-6 and 2-8 ahead, and the challenge with that is Lennon has been exceptional for a long time for Pats. He's had ups and downs in his form, and the loss of Chris Forrester, who isn't a sitting midfielder per se, but him and Lennon sort of set together, and Forrester dictated the play, has meant the sort of 2-8s, they don't play with 2-8s. I won't go overboard with numbers, but we all know midfield 3 is 6, 8 and 10. They play sort of 1, 1 and 1 a little bit. So Brendan Kavanagh normally is the higher one. Bagley then sort of in between. And what that done is left Lennon a little bit too isolated at times. You look at the Derry goal, Gareth, the ease in which they done it. You go back a couple of weeks, Shelbourne, Mark Coyle went right through the midfield. And it's a little bit like Lennon is trying to put out fires on his own at the moment. And they're just too open in that midfield.
You've a video here. I think we can play the video of Pats maybe as an example of where some of the issues are. So you can talk us through this.
Yeah, it's just something simple as the goal in terms of... wrong clip.
Wrong clip. Oh, God damn it, Vinny.
Gareth went missing on that one.
Gareth did a runner there as well. Back, look at that. Second you go, man. Where'd you go? Second, he thought he had a break.
Close the door.
Second, he thought he had a break. You're doing so much analysis, you're getting confused with your clips of analysis. So, what were you about to show?
So, effectively, it's the goal from the other night, Gareth. We talk about the goal the other night. When you think, it's very simple from Derry, it's straight down the middle of the pitch. And what ends up happening is you've one sitting midfielder in Lennon and you've two ahead of him. Very simple goal. And the two ahead of him being Bagley and it was a Kavanagh or Keane Levy, I can't remember who was in there. But a simple run off Lennon's shoulder meant Derry are in on goal. And they're in Pat's back four, and it's a simple ball out wide. It's Michael Duffy cut in, I think, from his left wing, gets it in behind Lennon in an acre of space. So the back four Pats are too deep. And that's been a recurring theme for them. And it's very simple, ball out wide, and it's a good run. Stephen is looking for an offside. I've watched it a few times. I'm not sure it is. In any stretch of the imagination, I don't know who's doing Stephen's pitch side analysis, but it doesn't look offside, and it's a very, very simple goal. And they've had real problems in that centre midfield. And we spoke about what Pats need over the last few weeks. I think everyone has been saying different things, but they definitely need a midfielder.
That's my favourite goal of the season so far. I won't get goal of the season because so many teams do this thing now where they pile everybody over, say at Galway that day, by the two dugouts, and you've all 20 outfield players crammed into this tiny little area. And I was like, why didn't somebody just make a dash that way? And then if you have a keeper who can ping a ball 60 yards, suddenly maybe you find yourself through, but also puts some doubt in their heads. And that's almost what they did on Friday night, that everybody's expecting one thing and he just bombed it down
long. Oh, the long goal against Galway. I mean, that's a set play that we all try at different stages. It's not, there's nothing new in that in terms of everyone tries that at different stages, where particularly you get some teams who hold a shape and one of the fullbacks will stay. But like Pat's just brought everyone into one half of the pitch. It's just so obvious to do it.
I'm gonna say something now. 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was massively worried about Pats. I thought they were completely disjointed. Centre half pairings wasn't working at all. That midfield, as Vinny said, was so soft. It was incredible. But watching the other night, and I know Derry won, I am more encouraged about Pats. I thought they were quite good, especially in the first 20 minutes. They were very good. They were energetic. They kept nicking the ball from Derry in the midfield, but then they just died a death and they hadn't got much. The players from the bench didn't work. But I'm more encouraged about Pats now than I was the last two times that I watched them. They've got something going again. See, before that in the Brandywell, even the time that Pats beat Derry 2-0 in Inchicore, when it was two penalties and Winchester got sent off, I thought Pats were horrendous on the night. Awful on the night. Derry probably shaded the game, but Pats the other night, I saw enough green shoots to think, you know what, they could go now and pick up some points. But Derry defensively were solid. And again, Pats struggled against Waterford, Galway, Drogheda and Derry at home, the three matches. They really struggled against that flat back five, two in midfield and then three up front. But I was more encouraged the other night. They created enough chances. They played well enough.
All right, we are out of time. I suspect this week we could have gone on for about 5 hours because we never even got to touch on Cork City and their ongoing struggles, what's been happening at Drogheda United. So tomorrow, Cork are at home against Pats. Bowes are at home against Sligo Rovers. It's Derry against Drogheda, and Shamrock Rovers are at home against Waterford on Friday night. And our live commentary game on News Talk is going to be Galway United against Shelburne. We've got the pre-match showdown there. You'll be able to catch that in our social channels. And then we are going to be live on the radio from 7 o'clock. Owen Sheehan's going to be down there alongside Jonathan Higgins and Brian Kerr. So it's going to be a cracking evening. The League of Ireland Pod and Off the Ball is brought to you by Rockshore 00. Refreshingly alcohol-free. Always be drink aware. Get the facts and visit drinkaware.ie. You can now officially go about your business, Gareth.
Cheers, man. Thank you very much.
Take another break. We'll have a little less drama over the next 7 days with a bit of luck.
Yeah, thank God.
All right, we'll talk to you next Thursday. Good luck.
The League of Ireland Pod.
On Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the refreshingly alcohol-free Rockshore 00. Get the facts. Be drink aware. Visit drinkaware.ie.